This is the Chochmat Nashim podcast on JewishCoffeeHouse.com, because Judaism is better when women are heard. Now, here are Rachel Stomel, Ann Gordon, and Shoshana Keats-Jaskal.
Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Rachel Stomel, here with
Ann Gordon
and Shoshana Keats-Jaskal.
And today we're going to talk about a touchy, touchy subject. It's something that inevitably raises a stir right around this time of year, every single year. It's something that pretty much every shul I've ever been to has had a huge fight over. It's something that divides communities and inspires breakaway minions and sparks lots and lots of debate around Shabbos tables and boardroom tables alike. You guessed it, it's women and Simchas Torah. So on Simchas Torah, we celebrate the completion of our yearly cycle of reading the entire Torah in weekly portions, and then we begin that cycle anew. So we're not slackers. In most shuls, the Sifrei Torah, meaning the Torah scrolls, are taken out of the Aron Kodesh, the Ark, and we sing and we dance around in circles called hakafot that are accompanied by call and response verses. And it's a big, happy event with a lot of parallels to a Jewish wedding, actually, in its festiveness. As the kids these days would say, Simchas Torah is lit. The Torah is fundamental to Jewish life. As we all know, it's the center of everything we do as Jews, and that applies to Jews of all genders. But the way that women experience Simchat Torah has been a little different than the way that men do. The way women participate or don't participate, as case may be, on Simchas Torah is different depending on your shul, on your community, on your politics, and so many other factors that come together in pretty complicated ways. In some shuls, women simply stand and watch the men's revelry from behind a mechitza. In other shuls, women dance and sing in their own circles and in their own section, but without a Sefer Torah. In other shuls, women hold and dance with the Sefer Torah, even reciting some of the hakafot. Others go to separate all-women's events, and there's many variations in between. When it comes to women and Sefer Torah, what's normal in certain circles would be seen as horrific in other circles, and vice versa. And of course, what would be a discussion about women and Jewish participation without mentioning our favorite A word, agenda, which is thrown around more heavily than candy at Kol HaNe'arim. So there's a lot to unpack here in terms of what the halacha actually says about women and Sifrei Torah, what our communities are comfortable with and why, how that turns into policy in the end of the day, and how we deal with it. So I'm excited to dive in. But first, it's time for our troll and our firgun of the week.
Today's troll is my personal troll. He says, "You are the queen of Sinat Chinam. Until when will you hold a grudge against the Haredim? Hashem loves even the most wicked Jews. You think he doesn't love the Haredim as well with all of their faults? You don't think the day will come when Hashem will say enough?" I got to be honest. I don't know, understand half the things he says. All I know is that I'm a queen.
And for firgun, Chochmat Nashim partners on occasion with the Orthodox Leadership Project of America in America, which is headed, among other people, by Yardena Azband. Yardena Azband's husband is David Glazer. David Glazer had jury duty. He asked people for podcast recommendations. Someone else said to him the following: new books on Jewish studies, Valley Beit Midrash, Tikva Foundation. You better be up to date on the Chochmat Nashim podcast.
You better.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anne, can you tell us a little bit about what are the baseline halachot of women and Sefer Torah? How does this all work?
All right, let's start with the fact that there are two distinct and halachically important aspects to the question of women dancing with the Sefer Torah. There's halacha, and then there's what I'll call the pasnisht. Pasnisht means, you know, nah, not so much. We don't do that.
In Yiddish.
In Yiddish. The pasnisht means what the community does, and so often what the community doesn't do or hasn't done to this point. We'll come back to this as it's the driving element in many shuls' decision-making on this issue. That's because at the end of the day, meaning the reason it can be left to pasnisht as a reason to make your decision that way, at the end of the day, the strict halacha is, according to most, to permit women to dance with a Sefer Torah, meaning the halachic bottom line is that technically it's okay, it's permitted. And then the question is left to the congregations and the shul rabbis and the communities and the communal norms to adjudicate whether it's going to be acceptable in practice in that particular shul. Halachically, there is an issue, or there may be one, namely, the question is whether someone who is ritually impure may handle that which is ritually pure. This sounds very far afield from Simchas Torah. Stay with me for a minute. This is most relevant, and not relevant at all, in the area of Kodshim. It's most relevant because that's where it applies. It's not relevant at all because we don't have Kodshim in an era with no temple.
What do you mean by Kodshim? Can you explain that?
Kodshim is the food that the Kohanim, the priests, would eat. They didn't work the land. They didn't have food except for what was given as gifts from the people to the Kohanim. I mean, they could have gotten food in other ways as well, but part of their food is from the sacrifices. A portion is given of many to the Kohanim. What happens if that food comes in contact with impurity. That can mean a bug, that can mean a dead body, that can mean a menstruant woman. Ritual impurity. Then that food is rendered impure. In this case, we're talking about a pure Sefer Torah, and we're talking about the impurity of a woman who is indeed, she's reached puberty, she's menstruated in her life, she has not gone to the mikvah between her last menstrual cycle and her potential touching of the Sefer Torah. The thing is that the Gemara in Masechet Brachot, Rabbi Yehuda ben Patera says, like fire, the words of the Torah cannot be rendered impure. So really we're done, right? Like that should be it. There's no discussion of whether a woman can hold a Sefer Torah if the issue is whether she's impure, if she can make the Sefer Torah impure, if in fact there is no way to make a Sefer Torah impure. Then we're not concerned about ritual impurity with regard to her contact of the Torah. The Rambam paskens this way, Divrei Torah eina mekabelet tumah, the words of Torah do not get rendered impure. The Shulchan Aruch holds like the Rambam, we should be done. We can go home. But there are sources, and they're Rishonim, like the Ravya and the Or Zeruah, respected Rishonim, medieval authorities, who attest to the fact that women took upon themselves not to enter a synagogue, let alone touch a Sefer Torah, while menstruating. The Ugur notes that the women in his community did go to shul, but they would avoid looking at the Sefer Torah itself during Hagbah when they were menstruating. I do wonder if there might be other explanations for women who opted to stay home from shul when menstruating, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt for now. The Rama, and this is where it really boils down to what applies to our discussions for today, the Rama, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, notes this practice of the women not going to shul in his discussion of the Halachot. I'm going to read it in Hebrew and translate. Yesh shekatvu she'ein lisha nida bimei riata likanes lebeit knesset o lehitpalel o lehazkir Hashem o liga b'sefer. There are those who said that a woman who is menstruating, meaning actually menstruating, not just not having gone to the mikvah to render herself pure again, that they would not go into the Beit Knesset, go into a synagogue, or pray, or say the name of God, or touch a Sefer Torah. V'yesh omrim shemuteret bakol v'chein ikar. And there are others who say that all of those things are totally permitted, and the Rama says v'chein ikar. That is the bottom line halacha according to the Rama. It is permitted for a woman who is menstruating to go into the shul, to pray, to mention Hashem's name, or to touch the Sefer Torah. Aval, and these are the key words that people like to mess with. Aval haminhag b'midunot eila kisvara rishona. This practice in our lands is like the first rationale that the women would not go in. He doesn't say it's obligatory at all. He says this is our practice, even though the ikar, the main halacha, was that it's permitted for them to do. His bottom line is that it's permitted, even when a woman is menstruating. The Mishnah Berurah attests to the fact that women did go to shul. The question comes then to Simchat Torah. What are we doing when it comes to Simchat Torah? We're going to permit women to carry a Sefer Torah, dance with a Sefer Torah, if technically it's permitted, but there's a practice in some communities not to allow it, but technically it's permitted. What happens when you have women who want to dance with the Sefer Torah or women who don't want to dance with the Sefer Torah? What is a community to do? Part of this discussion, I think, falls on every community. I mean, that's practically how it works, but because of the nature of Simchat Torah. Simchat Torah is fundamentally, in the scheme of Jewish history, a new holiday. We've had it for thousands of years, but only thousands of years, not more. Meaning, it began in Bavel. It began as an exilic holiday. It's not from the Torah. It's not in the Torah. Look, the date of Shmini Atzeret is in the Torah. The phenomenon of Yom Tov Sheni is ancient, as from the time of the destruction of the temple. The phenomenon of having a holiday of reading the Torah, completing the cycle of reading the Torah every year, the way they read the Torah in Bavel, it's not even the way they read the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, where they read it on a 3-year cycle. The dancing, the phenomenon of Hakafot, seems to be even later than that. It seems to have become a thing, and a big thing, and a happy thing in the 1600s. So, if you want to say that women should not dance with the Torah, and one of the arguments that people say about why women should not be dancing with the Sefer Torah is because women don't dance with the Sefer Torah, then we have to say men didn't used to dance with the Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah wasn't read on an annual basis, meaning all of these things are entrenched in our practice of the holiday year, of the calendar year, and yet they're not as ancient or as divine as we might think about Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeret itself. So that gives the leeway for each community to decide what's going to be best for its community, for the women of the community, for the men of the community, I suppose. There are yeshivot where dancing does not occur because there's a pas nisht in those communities for there to be dancing with a Sefer Torah. It's considered levity as opposed to joy. And if that's your attitude, if you think that there's something flippant or whatever about dancing with a Sefer Torah, then don't do it, right? Meaning there's no
neither
way.
Neither men nor women.
Neither men nor women. This concern, it comes up all the time. You mentioned before agenda. This concern of whether women will come to dancing with the Sefer Torah with a proper attitude, right? Maybe they're going to make light of it. I mean, you're not going to do it if you're going to make light of it. You're not going to come to shul and be concerned and caring about wanting to be there if you're going to make light of it. And nobody should be making light of the Torah or Simchas Torah, not men, not women. There are those who say that we read Kohelet on Shabbat Chol HaMoed of Sukkot to remind us to keep our joy joyful and not levity, not craziness. There should be no element of disrespect in the kind of joy. No matter how wild and crazy your dancing is, it should all be in the proper spirit of the holiday. Another reason they say that women should not dance with the Sefer Torah is the concern that the Sefer Torah are heavy. I would say if you're concerned that you cannot hold the Sefer Torah, do not take it. There's a concern about tzniut. The concern is for the men maybe watching the women, so close the machitza. I mean, again, I am saying this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but these issues are not halachic issues. These issues are societal issues, and they can be answered quite right.
So it's ironic, actually, to hear you say that the concern of women being inappropriately excited or having levity when they dance with the Torah, when my experience has been that when I do see women who are able to dance with the Torah, they're so serious about it, meaning it means so much to them because for so much of their lives, often they haven't had that ability. They haven't had that chance. I can just share my own personal story when it comes to Simchat Torah, which actually had a deep effect on me in terms of going to shul. I go to a Dati Leumi shul. It's not exactly modern Orthodox, but I guess that's the closest way to say, I guess it's modern Orthodox in Israel, obviously. And by practice, we don't have a Torah on the women's side. And I asked the rabbi if we could please have a Torah on the women's side to dance with. And he said he would get back to me, and he did get back to me basically saying, listen, halachically it's not a problem, but I think it's going to tear apart the community. I think people aren't ready for it. And my answer is no. And I would never have guessed, I'm actually crying, I would never have guessed that getting that phone call would be so emotional for me. I felt completely shut out. I felt like I was just, the door was slammed in my face. I was punched in the gut. And what I not wanted, but what I hoped for, what I was asking for, which I knew, and he said those words, it's not a halachic problem. And therefore, I couldn't understand how he could say to me, I'm not allowing it. And it became actually b'diavad a big deal because people, and when he sent out the letter, it's not a halachic problem, but people aren't going to be ready for it. And this, and people were like, but wait, you didn't ask everybody. Like, we want that. And a lot of people were, you know, women and men were saying, but if it's not a halachic problem, why aren't we doing it? Like, Makorekan, like what's happening here that it's not a halachic problem, but you're not allowing us. What does that mean? How can you say it's going to, you know, destroy the community when you haven't asked the whole community?
It's a very strange phenomenon that we say we live our lives according to halacha. We want Jewish law to dictate everything that we do. And then when Jewish law permits something to run aground because of a less stipulated kind of reason, right? That's more amorphous. He didn't take the pulse of the community before he's, I mean, I can't speak to your community, but, and if everybody had voted, well, then would it really tear the community apart? You know, these questions, do you teach the community differently? Right?
Also, who counts as the community? A lot of times, this is what the community wants, but the community often doesn't include even asking women.
I actually said in the conversation, I said, okay, but wait, what if we just have a Torah on the women's side and you put it on a bima and we dance around it? Or what if we go to the Simcha Hall and it's on a bima and we dance around it? Like, let's find a way that the people who have concerns, if they're legitimate concerns, or if you feel that it's a legitimate concern, can feel better about it. And those of us who want a Torah to dance with, like, again, it kind of hits back to, like, what are we actually asking here for? Like, am I asking to lane? Am I asking for, like, aliyot? Am I asking to duchen? I mean, like, what am I asking for? And I just felt in that conversation the tremendous, God, I can't even, the challenges that we have and the layers of it, and I felt utterly and totally defeated. And ever since that moment, and it's a number of years now, I don't feel like my shul is for me. And it's painful, and I have kids. It has affected me in such a way that I much prefer to stay home and daven and not go to shul. The flip side of this is that one of the congregants actually owns a little Torah. It's like a kosher, small Torah.
Not too heavy.
Not too heavy for those women who can't schlep a Torah.
It's always funny. I think when I see, like, you know, people telling women, oh, you can't carry a Torah. And so the women are standing there watching the men carry Torah.
Holding
they're
their
holding
toddlers,
their
yeah.
kids who are like, you know, their 6-year-old kid who weighs like 40 something pounds. And they're 100%. Like, oh, you can't carry a Torah.
Oh, I can't dance with a Torah. Watch this. A kid in each hand. Yeah. In heels. So yeah, that's funny. The family has a small Torah and they give it to us. And on Simchat Torah night, we go to a local park and we invite all the women who want to come. And we actually have hakafa under the stars in a park with women and girls from all different kinds of congregations who join us. It's not massive, but it's something that's actually very special to me. And in terms of what I started by saying, which is that I've seen women who do hold the Torah with awe. I've walked with a few other people down from where I live to the closest shul that does this. Is about a 40-minute walk where it lets women have the Torahs. And I've seen women hold the Torah for the first time in their entire lives. Old women crying.
A shout out here to our supporter and fan, Shira Pasternak Ba'iri, who wrote a Times of Israel blog post about exactly this. An older woman sitting, holding the Sefer Torah.
It's an emotional thing. And it's shocking to me to hear the idea that, oh, women might not take this seriously. Seriously? Seriously? Yeah. We take this very seriously, okay? Yeah. Like, yeah. You don't have to worry about this.
Look at the men's side and see how, yeah. You want to know something that's really crazy? So the first time that I actually saw the inside of a Sefer Torah, like the actual inside of the unrolled parchment, was behind glass at the Israel Museum. And even though I've been going to shul. Yeah, I've been going to shul my entire life. Like I'm FFB, as they say, which I hate that phrase, but whatever. Even though I've been going to shul my whole life, there were never opportunities for me to get close to a real Torah. Because when they do Hagbah, like in the shul, and they lift the Torah for everyone to see, I can barely see it because I'm pretty short and I usually can't see over the mechitza or through the mechitza in the shuls that I go to. And the men who lift it don't actually hold it high enough for people like me to actually see it. Plus, it's actually too far away for me to see the writing inside, all the way from the women's section. So I just point in the direction of it and say, Vizot HaTorah, this is the Torah. But I'm not pointing at the Torah. I'm pointing at the space between me and the Torah, which is pretty symbolic, actually. It's that space, and that's pretty sad. But to me, you know what's the most sad? It's that up until that point, I didn't even realize that I had never seen the inside of a Torah. I never felt like, man, I wish I could go look at that, but it's off limits to me. Or, oh, I feel like I'm so cheated out of my own heritage. I never felt that because it never even occurred to me that I was missing something. I never had any expectation that I was supposed to even see the inside of a Torah. I didn't even know what I was missing. So there was no resentment there. It was just a vacuum, and it was completely invisible to me. And to me, that's just really sad that so many women, I'm assuming, also have the same experience, that they don't even realize that there's something that they're not a part of and not seeing. Luckily, since then, I've been encouraged to have more corrective experiences when it comes to the Sefer Torah, mostly to the credit of my husband and my shul, where it's just regarded as normal for women to be able to see and access the Torah. And I'm really grateful for that.
I want to just address that point of being grateful. I think that sometimes, because so many communities get hassled about this topic, I'm not coming down with any opinion on whether a given shul should have women dancing in the Sefer Torah or not, because it depends on each shul. I can talk to my shul. I can't talk to anybody else. But I do think that there's really something very powerful about when women are dancing for Simchat Torah, whether they have a Sefer Torah or not. It does not take the Torah, the physical Torah, for me anyway, to be joyous with regard to the Torah. It's not about seeing it inside. Seeing it inside, I think, is a tremendous, powerful experience, and I think everybody should see the Torah inside at some point. I think that women should hold a Sefer Torah and feel that weight at some point. Whether the shul allows it for Simchat Torah is a different, individualized kind of question. But the phenomenon of coming to this holiday and feeling disenfranchised, which I think many, many women do, and I understand completely why that is, because it's become this tremendous hassle, I think we need to kind of remember that we're living our lives according to those words of the Torah, those words that are not able to be rendered impure, the words that are there for us, and we should rejoice. Even if it's not always the right setting, and even if you feel like your shul is not yours, but in the bigger scheme of things, like the Torah is there from Hashem, from God, for each one of us. So that may sound a little sappy, but I do think it's true.
So the fact that Simchas Torah is so full of contention, like we've touched upon, and it touches so many nerves, I think that means that we're really onto something here. It's something important. Wherever you see conflict, there's an opportunity to explore it, to get down to the bottom of all these juicy issues that intersect in Simchas Torah, the question of gender, of tradition, of halacha, of access, of inclusivity, of communal decision-making, of participation. All these things are really loaded, and there's no wonder that such a loaded and symbolic event ends up being a catalyst for all these discussions to take the stage. So I hope today's podcast has given you something to think about, or at least more ammo for whatever argument you'll get in this year. Do you have a complicated relationship with Simchas Torah? If you do, tell us about it. Find us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram to continue the conversation, because we love hearing your thoughts. And if you like this podcast, share it with your friends. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Can you hear us now?